This is Chris Haas. I am interviewing Joanne Elder for the Madison LGBT Community Oral History Project with UW-Madison for the Oral Archives. We are at Ms. Elder's home here in Madison, Wisconsin, and we're just going to get started. Can I ask you to start maybe just, I guess, like, if you're willing, when you were born, where you were born, maybe a little bit about your family, your original family of origin.
I was born in Dayton, Ohio, March of 1929. My folks were divorced when I was five, and my mother and I moved into the home of my grandparents in Dayton. My grandmother was an absolute saint, and mother found a job. Finally, she worked for most of her working life at the National Cash Register Company.
Cool.
And so mother and I lived with my grandparents, and my grandmother was very supportive and lovely person. So, and I got along fine with my mother. So that was a little unusual upbringing.
Right.
We were always at the lower end of comfortable. You know, we weren't poor, mm-hmm. but we weren't rich either.
Sure. Yeah.
And as I said, we had one of the nicer houses in a poor neighborhood. So I always felt fine about who I was and where I was and so forth. I went to an integrated high school, but things were very, very, very different back then. There was a separate swimming pool for Afro-Americans.
Wow.
I never even knew that when I was growing up.
Wow.
I had some Negro friends, as we called folks then, because I sang in the chorus, and there were a number of... But it was a very segregated place. But I didn't notice it because I wasn't part of the segregation.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It's pretty dumb. Well, but at any rate, you know, it wasn't affecting me.
Right.
And I wasn't prejudiced, it says here in small.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, you don't know when you don't know.
That's right.
You know.
That's a good way to put it.
Yep. Yep. So you're an only child?
Only child.
Okay. So you went to college?
Well, my mother remarried in my senior year to a lovely man who had lost a daughter he only had one daughter in his former marriage, and she died 6 months, and she was born in March of 1929, and she died 6 months later. Oh. So in many ways, he felt like he was picking up a daughter.
Sure.
And he paid my way through Oberlin College.
That's incredible. What did you study in Oberlin?
Sociology.
Of course.
And met my husband there.
You did meet Joe at Oberlin.
I did indeed.
I wondered. And so then where did you go from there?
From Oberlin?
Yeah.
Well, Joe and I were married right out of college. We graduated in June. We're married in August. He turned 21 in July.
Oh.
So we could legally get married without his parents' permission. And we sailed for India on a two-year fellowship from Oberlin to teach English in schools in Madurai, South India.
Wow.
Our daughter Shanti was born 9 months later in Kodaikanal, India.
Cool.
Up in the mountains. It
really?
Was cool in the mountains.
Wow.
She was born in April, which is one of the hottest parts of South India, hottest months in South India.
Wow.
So that was fun. And then we stayed on another year there. I taught English in the schools. Joe and I were both teaching English. He in the boys' school and I in the girls' school. And we both did music and dramatics in the college. There was a women's college there. So we had a wonderful 2 years.
That's incredible.
Then we came back to Oberlin. Both of us finished master's degrees at Oberlin before Joe went on to Harvard. And I wrote the third chapter of my master's thesis in the hospital when our second child was born. Our son John was born in Cambridge Hospital. And because Joe had no income, because he was a student, the doctor didn't charge us.
Free baby. I love
free
it.
Baby. Shanti cost $25.
Oh.
She was born in India.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hospital fee was $25.
That's neat. Wow.
Somewhat different.
Yeah.
Then our third child, Ed Elder, was born in Dayton, Ohio, right after Joe graduated from Harvard. And Joe had a job that first summer collecting data for, what was the Flying Red Horse? Marathon or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
So he was able to make $1,000 or something like that in the summer by doing social research for this firm. And then at the end of the summer, he had been hired as an assistant professor at Oberlin.
Oh, wow.
So our youngest son was born in Dayton, where myself and the younger children were staying with my folks who lived in Dayton. And then Joe began teaching at Oberlin that fall.
Wow.
So
full circle, went from living with you know, your grandparents to coming back with your own kids to live with your parents. That's
no, I was living with my mother.
Oh,
that
gotcha.
Summer.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, mother and stepfather that summer.
I see.
Yeah. And then at the end of the summer, Joe came back to a second son, a daughter and his second son. And then we had 2 years at Oberlin.
They were there 2 years. How did you end up in Madison then?
He was offered a position here in University of Wisconsin in both the sociology department and South Asian studies, which he was very interested in. So that's how we ended up in Madison.
Oh.
So he had a joint appointment in sociology and South Asian studies, which was then called Indian studies.
Sure.
But they changed the name because people got it confused with American Indians.
Oh,
so
sure.
South Asian studies. It's changed its name 2 or 3 times. It has a third name now.
Isn't that fun? It all ends up being the same thing, but it's
same thing, different
as
names.
You learn when you know, you know, right? So, in what when Joe was working, were you home with the kids then?
University was expanding at great lengths, and so with my master's in sociology, they reached out. Could you be a grader? Could you be a teaching assistant? Could you teach the summer introductory course? And I actually taught sociology and extension for 2 or 3 years. And one of the problems, had I finished my doctorate here, Joe and I could not have taught in the sociology department because there was this no nepotism rule.
Oh.
Which is, they discovered, interestingly, that this discriminated mostly against women.
Wow, go figure.
So in the 70s, they changed that rule.
Oh, good.
So that
that's interesting.
Husbands and wives could serve in the same department. They could not vote on each other's salary.
Well, that sounds fair, I suppose.
That sounds fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at any rate, I was just preparing to get the high school had called me and said, we hear you're a good teacher. We need a sociology teacher in high school. And I said, I don't have any teaching credentials, public school teaching credentials. Oh, that doesn't matter, he said then.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly matters now. So Joe was invited to a think tank in Connecticut at Wesleyan University. And there I started to get a degree in education. Meanwhile, the chair of the sociology department said, we really need an undergraduate advisor. Would you consider doing that half time? Oh, well, that sounds fun.
Yeah, right.
And so I did that for a year. And then they said, would you like to work full time which you're putting in anyway and get paid for it.
There you go, exactly.
And so I worked as the undergraduate advisor for 30 years in sociology.
Wow. That's awesome. All the lives you must have touched that have gone through your hands and through
Right.
That's really neat.
Including some LGBT people that came out in my later days.
Yes.
Yes, they were just, the movement was just beginning to get enlightened.
That's good.
However, I remained quite unenlightened about LGBT issues until our youngest son, Ed, came out a year after he graduated from college.
Oh.
Ed, as you can see, is tall and handsome.
Very handsome.
The women were crazy about him. He was invited to both proms. And I never had an inkling that Ed was gay. Now, as I look back on it, there were some inklings, but I didn't catch on.
Sure.
I didn't want to.
Right. Didn't matter. It was still your son.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about gays and lesbians. And I certainly didn't have one. Until I was cutting Ed's hair one day. I'm the family barber. And he was about to leave for Brazil to do an public health internship over there. He has a master's in public health from Johns Hopkins. And we were talking about Seven Brides with Seven Brothers. It was playing at the theater or something. And he said, you know, Mom, it's the brothers that turned me on. I said, Ed, are you trying to tell me you're gay? He said, yep, been trying to tell you that for some time. As I said, in college, when he graduated from college, the girls were surrounding him. Ed, you will write to me, won't you? And this sort of thing. And he never did, of course.
Yeah.
And everywhere he went, girls were crazy about him. And he didn't return the favor.
Right.
But he also didn't have a boyfriend either. You know.
Yeah.
So at any rate, he went off to Brazil right after he told us he really was gay. And he'd always been gay, and he'd always knew he was gay, but he just never told us.
Yeah.
So so then Joe and I had to start educating ourselves. We have a gay son. He's wonderful.
Right.
Why did we miss the cues?
Right. And he was in Brazil at this point, right?
He was in Brazil.
Tell you, just something I need to tell you before I leave here.
Right. So that gave us a couple of years to do our homework.
Uh-huh.
Well, interestingly enough, now this was 1982. Fortunately, the AIDS epidemic, we knew about how to prevent AIDS at this point.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was no longer, the AIDS epidemic was no longer in the closet.
Right.
And at least young gay men could take precautions that they might have been less inclined to do earlier.
Yeah.
And so I went to the library to learn more about lesbians and gays, okay? So I went to the old card catalog, looked up book titles, went into the stacks, couldn't find the books. So then I went to the librarian and I said, I can't find any of these books. She looked at me and she looked at the list of books that I had chosen. She said, oh, we lock those up. People tear out pages or they steal the books.
Oh.
So she had to unlock a cabinet where they kept all the books on gays and lesbians.
Wow.
This was 1982 at the university library.
Yeah.
Wow. So these are some historic facts that we need to
absolutely
get into. So then, and you know those weren't very good books either.
Right.
Pretty, as I look back on it, they were full of nonsense.
Yeah.
So at any rate, I was trying to educate myself on just what it meant to be gay or lesbian. And was it real? Could it be changed? You know,
right.
Obviously, you don't want your kid to grow up persecuted.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I had a lot to learn. But Ed was okay. He was now out, but he hadn't told anybody but us. But he said, "Yes, yes, you can tell people. You can tell people."
Sure.
And so then I got acquainted with Jane LaFleche here, whose son was much more outgoing than Ed, and he came out when he was only 16. Ed, by this time, was 21 or so, 22. And Jane LaFleche heard about PFLAG nationally, and which is not much older than that, actually. And so she started this little group, and she heard about Ed and myself, and wouldn't I be interested in coming to a PFLAG group? And pretty soon we were it, Jane and I. So we ran the PFLAG group for the next 20 years. Wow. And that was very interesting. You know about PFLAG, Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
I do, but we can...
Well, it was founded by this woman who lived in New York, and her son was gay, and she stepped up to the bat and said, "Let's do something about educating the public." And she was the founder of PFLAG, Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. So, and then it became a national group with groups in all the big cities and around the country. And at first, we met in this living room, or Jane's living room, and at most we had 3, 4, 5 people, and then it began to grow. And we found larger venues to meet in. For the last 20 years, I think, we've been meeting at the Quaker Meeting House here. And but at one time, we had a roster of maybe 70 names. Not that we had that many people attending, but
sure.
At least it was a larger list of people. And people would come in, and we'd use up boxes of Kleenex, and everybody thought the world was coming to an end. Their kid was gay or lesbian, and it was quite heartwarming to change hearts and minds over the subject. You know, everything's going to be fine. Your kid's fine. You're going to be fine.
Right.
And but it was... we educated ourselves along with educating everybody else.
Sure.
That's good. Incredible. There are good books and good literature, and you just have to get it out there.
Exactly.
But it was all very new. I mean, this outing of the Society of Gays and Lesbians, and now trans, is not 80, 90, you know, 30 years.
Right.
20 to 30 years.
Of history
here, yeah. Wow. Where we went from complete ignorance practically to knowledge.
Yeah. How did people around you, how did your son's, I guess, brothers and sisters, family, how did the people around you react when you told them?
That was very interesting. One of my friends who is a liberal person, but as ignorant about gay and lesbian issues as we were, said, "Ed's gay? Gay must be good."
Oh, how wonderful.
And that was generally true.
Right.
Ed was a great role model for being gay.
He was a great role model, period.
He's a great role model. Nothing wrong with this nice kid.
Yeah.
And... So we had very positive response from our friends. And I'm happy to tell you that the Quaker meeting, the Quaker church, it's called the Society of Friends. I was on the board of the American Friends Service Committee, and the very first board meeting I went to in Philadelphia was talking about gay and lesbian Quakers and how we could be more supportive.
Oh, how wonderful.
I thought, boy, wow.
Right place at the right time.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Great.
And they had good literature. And they then produced some very good literature and made it kind of a cause célèbre for Quakers. So there are two branches of Quakers, and we belong to the more liberal branch. There are still Quakers that are quite conservative, and of course the Quakers in Africa, and there are a lot of Quakers in Africa, because there's one branch of Quakers that proselytized, the rest of us don't.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately that's the conservative branch.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
You can't just take for granted that Quakers are going to be open-minded.
Yes.
Is a branch that is very closed-minded.
I think that that goes with a lot of different beliefs and religions and
yeah, that's right.
You know,
but fortunately, our branch is very supportive, so we've been quite blessed by that. There's a large group of Quakers, mostly younger people, called what is it? It's gay and lesbian concerns. It's a whole kind of separate branch that meets, has an annual gathering, and very supportive of each other.
That's
spreading
great.
The word. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice to be able to know that you're welcome in a setting such as that. How did you know? You said
FLGC, Friends for Lesbians and Gay Concerns. FLGC, Friends for Lesbian and Gay Concerns. Pretty soon they're going to have to add trans there.
Get another letter in there. I know that's. You had said that with you had found good resources through the Quakers. How else did you find resources with through PFLAG?
Well, I think the whole world was beginning to open up. One of our gay senators, who didn't come out while he was still a senator after he finished his term, he wrote a very good book. What was his name? Ooh. Well, sorry, I can't bring it right
it's
up.
Okay.
But a Wisconsin senator came out and wrote a book about how he'd been living in a closet. Also a very presentable person who people had admired and so forth. And it was the same as our son. Oh, gay? He's gay? Well, gay must be good, you know.
Right.
You had lots of bad stereotypes of gays and lesbians.
Right.
And it's nice to have good stereotypes, you know.
Absolutely.
Then gay pride in Madison. Madison's always been a forward community for the GLBT community. Mm-hmm. And asked Joe and I to lead the parade one year.
Oh,
and
neat.
I called New York, where Ed was in graduate school there. And I said, how do you feel about our being in the Gay Pride Parade? This is going to out you for sure. And he said, go for it.
Oh.
So that's where we became quite public
right.
about our
affiliation.
Yeah. Then I was given the Woman of Distinction Award, and I think that was somewhere about 95. And I wrote a whole, you have to give a 5-minute speech. And I wrote my 5-minute speech about how I became enlightened about gay and lesbian issues. And the irony of that particular speech was that the other woman who, there were just two of us that year that received the award, and she had a gay son.
Oh.
But she had not come to terms with it.
Oh.
And her gay son was there, and he was beaming after I gave my talk. I loved it.
That's wonderful.
He came up to me afterwards, and he said, you know, I'm gay.
Oh. It's a small world.
Yeah. But it was a challenge, and I was challenging everybody there to get with it.
I think that's wonderful.
So at any rate, that's where we became very public faces of the gay world and met lots and lots and lots of nice people.
Absolutely.
Jane LaFlesh and I were given the, Ally Award by Outreach one year.
Cool.
And both Joe and I have had a number of awards for this, that, and the other thing. We've been well awarded with our support of the gay and lesbian community, but then we had an ulterior motive.
Well, as you should be, but by Ed must be very proud of the two of you and of course, your parents and how loving and accepting you are of him, but of what you've done for his community.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think that's incredible. You know, PFLAG is there to support those who don't understand, or even the ones that do understand, I believe. But it's for our families and for our friends. And
right.
I think that that's just wonderful what you've done.
Well, it wasn't hard, but we're pleased that the world is changing so rapidly.
Absolutely.
And now PFLAG really addresses the transgender question many more times than gay and lesbian. Transgender is the issue of the day.
Sure.
And we have several parents now coming in with transgender concerns. And that seems a very much more complicated one to me.
Yeah.
But it's definitely the concern of the day, because I think most of us in the world are coming around to complete acceptance of gays and lesbians. I hope that's true.
I
may
hope
be.
So too. No, I understand. I agree. I really hope the same thing.
Of course, we're living here in Madison, where
sometimes,
it's a good climate.
Yes.
But I didn't think I'd live long enough to see what's happening state after state after state. This has been a good year.
It has been.
Yeah. I'm cheering for Minnesota.
I am as well. I really hope that goes through, and I would really like to see our federal government step up and do something here with the what they have at the Supreme Court right now and what they're trying to deal with the DOMA and the is it Prop 8 that through California and what's
right. Oh.
Yeah, I think it's a really important time.
Well, we have a very big vested interest in DOMA, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Ed and Danny had a big Quaker wedding 20 years ago, and in New York City at the 15th Street Meeting House, which is a beautiful old Quaker meeting house with the white benches in a circle, and there were 200 people at their wedding.
Wow.
And there wasn't a dry eye in the room at the end of that service. You never saw so many people who rose to speak out of the silence. This is the, you see, we don't have programmed meetings.
Uh-huh.
And I had to laugh because one of my friends who went, who's not a religious person at all, but she said, oh, that silence, I thought it was going to be, there wasn't 5 minutes of silence in that. But it took about 5 minutes before people broke the silence,
right,
you know.
Right.
And then there was no more silence.
Mm. Oh.
It was a wonderful Quaker wedding. And they, as I said, they've just celebrated their 20th anniversary this year. So that's pretty good.
That's wonderful.
Ed married a nice Jewish boy. His name is Danny Ashkenazi. And he's a very talented composer and playwright, producer, and poor.
Well,
he needs to make his first Broadway play.
There you go.
He, meanwhile, teaches music in school. He teaches little kids how to write opera.
Really?
Yeah, music, little performances.
Oh.
Yeah. He's a very talented fellow. And Ed is now a family counselor. And doing pretty well in New York.
Good. Well, they've been together 20 years. They're obviously happy and...
Oh, yes.
They found their soulmates.
Yep.
Let's see. So, I know you and Joe... I'm trying to think here. I've heard that you volunteer on Saturdays down at, is it?
PFLAG at the Square.
And that is what that is, PFLAG at the Square?
Right. Well, we we keep the PFLAG table in our garage, and then we take it down every week and sit the table when quite a few times during the summer.
Yeah.
And it's a very heartening experience. People often walk by and say, thanks for being here. And that has changed over the years from the nasty glances we got years ago.
Right.
And, you know, people that avoid the table like the plague.
Yeah.
But we now have that one place on the square that people expect to see, that PFLAG table. And I said, we just started last Saturday, and I said, you know, maybe we don't need this anymore. And then I set the table last Saturday and said, I guess we do.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we have a lot of good literature there.
And it's accessible.
Very, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Somebody can go by and pick something up and it doesn't draw attention from anyone.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
I have picked up things from there when I first came out.
And we have stickers, you know.
I had a little ribbon pin one time when I was... But I agree. I think that that is just a wonderful thing that you guys do. That,
but it looks like, you know, I'm hoping that I'll live long enough to see it not be necessary. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would be wonderful. It really would. I think we're not there yet.
Maybe not yet, but I hope in your lifetime we see it as well.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I almost ended last year's Christmas card, which I haven't set out yet.
I love it.
By saying I don't think I'll live long enough to see any change or come, you know, enough change. It's been a wonderful year with state after state coming out for, if the Supreme Court doesn't obliterate DOMA, they will not do the right thing.
I agree. I can't imagine what they're going to do if they don't. That's, well, what do you think about that? What do you think, you know, the backlash on that will be if, you know?
Well, with this Supreme Court, I just have my fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Prop 8, I think they're going to pass on Prop 8, knowing that it will then be approved by the other circuit court.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they overturn both, of course, but I don't have very much confidence in this court.
Yeah.
But this experience over the years, since the 80s, you know, where we were all dumb and blindfolded on the issue, we've come a long way since 1982, three, when Ed came out.
Yeah.
We had a long way to go. You wouldn't believe how much prejudice there was way back then. But then maybe you would, since you've been interviewing old-timers.
Yeah, it's surprising, but, you know, I'd be interested, you know, what struck you that were, I guess, would be... the types of prejudice, I guess, would be my interest, is, you know... what you saw.
Well, people who were uninformed saw being gay or lesbian as being a choice. They were unwilling to recognize it as not a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was easy to see it as abnormal, because normal is what you are,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Sure.
That it's been around for centuries, forever. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why, when there's an argument about gay and lesbian issues, that there is not more people, there aren't more educated people standing up and saying, this is normal, this has been around forever.
Right, right.
That some people are and some people are not, and so get with it kind of thing. It's happening, but too slowly.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
But mostly it's what is normal. And if it's not me, you know,
mm-hmm.
obviously more people are heterosexual, mm-hmm. Then... must be something wrong with you, kind of thing.
Right.
But I do think that the real prejudice, the heavy prejudices of years ago are changing dramatically. And I think that if you notice the voting, the younger generation is with it. All we have to do is outlive my generation.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Maybe not that. Oh, you know.
Yeah,
a
really.
Few of them, but you're right.
Really. People over 65.
And even then, they just don't understand. They just never were.
Right, right. Because
if you didn't know, you don't know.
But I think people under 65 are changing very rapidly.
That would be good for us.
Oh, yeah. And inevitable. That's why, you know, I don't think this is an event that's going to be turned back.
I hope so. I agree 100%, and boy, I hope, you know, that is the truth.
Well, the other event in my life that's probably worth mentioning,
yes,
I decided to retire because, after all, my husband's working, and I had a lot of other things I wanted to do, and I haven't gotten them done yet, but I retired 20 years ago. In any case, the very year I retired in 95, there was a homophobic woman running for a school board, and the superintendent herself was pretty homophobic. And so the gay community came, "You gotta run for school board." Me? So I did, and they really did my campaign for me.
Oh.
And there's one very nice fellow who was a retired teacher and terribly much a victim of, I won't mention his name, mm-hmm. but he was a victim of being gay. He managed to get, you know, he retired as a very good public school teacher in the closet, but it had a very detrimental effect on his psyche. I mean, he's been very depressed and so forth. He's had a lot of trouble with depression. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he personally financed my yard signs, which were three seats, and I was on the third seat. I was running for the third seat of the school board. He had those signs all over town. I couldn't lose. In any case, I won. And the day that I won, the superintendent retired or walked away. She never came to a single board meeting after I won. And we elected the assistant superintendent to be the superintendent. That was Art Whitewater.
Yeah.
That's not quite right.
Rainwater.
Rainwater.
Yes.
Rainwater, of course.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I did a lot that first 3 years to try to change the climate in the schools. And one of the things we do have now that I think I'm definitely responsible for is the whole the position of, I don't know what they call her, civil rights or whatever it is.
Bonnie Augusta?
Yeah, it's Bonnie Augusta's position.
I actually I interviewed Bonnie Augusta.
Oh, good.
Which is also in the oral archives at UW-Madison.
Great.
And yes, her position was, I believe, an LGBTQ coordinator, but
yeah.
I'm not sure what it started as, but
I had a lot to do with that.
That's awesome. You've affected many children's lives because of her and because of making sure
I'm still on the superintendent's human relations committee, and we still don't have enough pro-gay books or enlightened books in the library. We need to do more. We need to make, we need to normalize GLBT issues in the classroom and in the library and so forth. There are books, but you need to have those in your classroom.
Mm-hmm. Accessible to the kids.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or not only accessible, but these are good reading. Everybody should read these books.
So you retired and then became even more busy.
Oh, yes.
It sounds like.
That's right. That's for sure. I retired and became more busy. So I had 3 years on the school board, and I decided, okay, somebody else can do it. The reporter who interviewed me after I won the school board election, said, asking me about my interests. And he said, your interest tend to be more international. I said, you're right. The United Nations Association, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Yeah. Always been a peacenik. And
that's good.
I mean, war and peace were my issues before I got into GLBT issues.
Wow.
Joe and I have always been peaceniks.
It's incredible. What do you do now to keep yourself out of mischief?
Same things. United Nations is still going. It's limping along. Nixon almost did in the UN, but we're trying to revive it here in Madison.
Good.
And we have a nice group of people who are United Nations advocates.
That's great.
And, of course, there are a lot of social issues with the Quakers, the Friends Committee on National Legislation. If you want to cut the budget, go to the FCNL. They'll tell you how to cut the budget, like have the Defense Department.
Yes, isn't
which
that
is
the truth?
Over-budgeted.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we've been very interested in watching the GLBT progress in the Army, Navy, and Marines.
Yes.
Yes.
That's, isn't that wonderful
that's
there?
That's been a big brownie point for the last couple of years.
Well, and I know Joe was asked to speak on behalf of when they cut the budget, correct, for the ROTC years ago, correct, on campus. So.
Oh, he led the, they had the last full department meeting, I mean, the Senate meeting.
Yeah.
At the university. You know that they have representatives to the Senate, so you never have all the faculty invited.
Right.
The last all the faculty invited was on the LGBT issue of ROTC.
Gotcha.
And Joe was one of the mainstays of that. And Chancellor, the woman.
Donna Shalala
was very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last full meeting of the Faculty Senate.
Wow.
And we voted to eliminate ROTC because of their prejudice. And if, you know, if they didn't open ROTC to everybody, we wanted them off campus. Well, the board overturned that because we would have lost a lot of money from the Defense Department. But the faculty voted right.
Exactly.
The board overturned it.
But that's impressive that many people were invited and voted to pass it. And that definitely makes a statement about UW-Madison.
It does
indeed.
And
how their faculty, what their faculty believes and how the school itself, I believe,
it was a wonderful
shines.
Victory, except it was overturned.
Right. Budgetary reasons.
Money war.
Yeah.
Now, Harvard threw ROTC out early, but then Harvard has a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Stanford did, too.
Really? I guess I didn't realize. Let's see. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that we want, that I've missed or that we can...
Well, I discovered all these wonderful organizations like Outreach. And did I mention that Jane and I were given the Ally of the Year Outreach Award?
Do you remember when that was? About...
Oh, boy.
Probably in the 80s, some 80s, 90s?
Certainly not later than the 90s. It was in sometime in the 90s, I think.
Okay.
And
it's a magnificent organization, Outreach is.
It is.
Madison LGBTQ
it is.
Community.
And we've been very supportive of Outreach, and they've been supportive of us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the other, well, primarily various I've served on various committees at Outreach and so forth, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, we were very active with the last election. Well, we worked very hard to get the amendment passed that lost because of the terrible wording and the shenanigans of the right wing. We really should have passed that, but there was a lot of underhanded shenanigans by the right wing in Wisconsin to subvert that.
And that's on the Defense of Marriage Act. Was that what it was called? I don't remember the actual name that it was.
That's not the right name.
It's not the right name. Sorry. I pulled that from somewhere. I do know what you're speaking of, though.
Defense of Marriage Act is DOMA.
Yeah, that, that's why that came so easily.
But at any rate, it would have made it possible for... Well, it would have put us in the states for allowing gay marriage.
Yeah.
Instead of making it impossible. Not just hard, but impossible.
Right.
And then you can't overturn it for 5 years. So, but with this legislature, I don't think we want to try it again.
Right. Not yet. We might not be the, hopefully we won't be the last state to make it legal to be.
Well, when I saw that we didn't throw the governor out of office, quite frankly, I thought we were doomed. Because I don't think we had a good candidate, but people are not aware of all the terrible things that the governor is doing.
I agree.
They just don't stay in touch. They don't care. Like this business of making teachers live in the area that they teach in. Can you imagine a teacher having to sell their house and move somewhere else?
No. Yeah, in putting it through in a budgetary...
And then trying to eliminate same-day registration. That's,
right.
That's outrageous.
It's insanity.
And so a lot of things.
Right.
A lot of things people are not aware of what's going on, and people don't care. So...
It's concerning, isn't it?
It's very concerning, yeah. And, of course, a lot of people didn't care about LGBT issues either.
Right.
That's why it just kept going under the radar all the time. It's not me, therefore it doesn't affect me.
Right.
Nobody I know is gay. They didn't think.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I think that the gay movement has progressed so rapidly is because people came out. And that, of course, we, as PFLAG, were saying all along, come out, wherever you are. Because people will see that you're not, you don't have three heads, and that you're really nice people, and so forth.
Right.
And I think that's helped an awful lot.
I do, too. Did you, so how would people find you for PFLAG? Parents, were they referred to you? Like you said, you started with a real small group, and then as it grew... Is that through, like, your outreach stuff that you do, like, on, you know?
Well, we tried to advertise. We sent notices to churches. So we did quite a lot of outreach within our means. We're a very small group and very meager means in terms of big deals.
Right.
So we're not supported by corporations and so forth.
That makes a big difference.
Right.
It sure does.
I remember one wealthy person coming in, I won't mention her name, because they ran a restaurant here in town. And her youngest son was gay, and she was just all broken up about it. And by the time she was with us a couple of years, she paid for the big banner that you see that PFLAG has in the parade. Those things are expensive,
oh,
like $250.
Absolutely.
That sort of thing. And so we've had a few blockbusters like that. No, I should mention the fact that we are going to be the first GLBT float in the Stoughton Parade this Sunday.
You are?
This Sunday. And the funny part of that story is that last year they made us take, they said we could have our banner, parents and friends of, but we had to cover up lesbians and gays. I kid you not.
Oh, my gosh.
This was 2 years ago.
And this is in the Stoughton, the Setnamite Parade?
Right.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, no, that was 2 years ago. So last year, they said we could have our banner, and at the last minute, they said, no, no, you can't have lesbians and gays. You can't. So we said, we're not going to march in any parade that we have to cover up. So we stood on the corner, and people were cheering us as they walked by. And then somebody came up with, we are an inclusive something. And we said, could we march behind you? And they said, sure, come in. So we just entered the parade anyway. And there was a lot of newspaper articles about how we'd been discriminated against. And so this year we're going to be there.
And you're going to have a float.
And we have a float, and we have the float decorated with all the countries in the world, including the Scandinavian countries.
Great.
That support GLBT.
Absolutely. So, oh, that's wonderful.
Let's hope it does not rain on Sunday.
It's supposed to be beautiful is what I heard. The last I heard, we're supposed to have beautiful weather for Mother's Day. Well, that's a wonderful way for you to celebrate Mother's Day.
It is,
isn't for your son. I mean, that gives me goosebumps. That's really neat.
And it's so public. And we should make a lot of progress on Sunday.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
You know, because honestly, Joanne, without people like you in this world helping those of us who are LGBT and Q, you know, I don't know where we would be. I think because of your outreach and because of you educate people, listen to people who are older. I believe older people listen to people who are older. And I think that, you know,
right,
what the things that you've been able to do, and I'm sure you will never be able to comprehend how much.
Well, I do. I do indeed believe that we've broken the ice.
Yes.
And then the model young GLBT people that are out there are doing the rest.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I think LGBT people being out is doing the most.
Yes.
And of course, the famous movie stars and what have you, that helps a lot. But in the community, and you know, lesbians and gay men with their children, they're obviously model parents.
Yeah.
That does a lot too.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Joanne, for your interview. This is Chris Haas, and this is Joanne Elder's interview.